The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Show. As the announcer of this show, I sometimes ask myself, to what shall I compare Eric? Shall I compare him to a summer's day? Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May.
But not Eric. I'll tell you, nothing shakes this guy.
And now here he is, wearing green leotards and a jester's coxcomb, Eric Metaxas.
Exit Todd, stage left.
Hey, folks, welcome to hour two of the Eric Metaxas Show. I continue to talk to our friend John Zmirak. John, I did want to ask you, I know that you were aware of the fact that I put out a tweet making fun of what Biden had done. I find people don't realize this, but sometimes I find Biden's missteps avuncular and almost charming in the way that, you know, certain old people say things or do things that are so ridiculous, you kind of have to laugh. The only problem is most of those people are not running for president of the free world. That's the problem.
Grandpa on The Simpsons is funny, except when he's in control of the nuclear button. That's scary.
That's right. So anyway, I sent out a tweet making fun of the fact that a lot of these white, older Democrats feel the freedom to do what they think of as black speak. They use the word ain't, and they kind of change their voice. Hillary Clinton's done this many times. Biden's done it a number of times. And they really reveal that they haven't really changed their views from, you know, probably when they were kids. And so I made fun of that.
Well, let's remember, Biden used to cooperate with segregationist politicians from the South. He worked with them in the Senate. He co-sponsored bills with them. There's all sorts of, in the congressional records, him praising these segregationist Democrats from the South. And he helped author the crime bill that put thousands of young black men in prison, that imposed a harsher sentence on crack, which was mainly used by black people, than on cocaine, which was mainly used by white people. I mean, the crime bill is universally considered now kind of a racist bill, and Hillary Clinton is embarrassed that she supported it. Joe Biden gets on television with a black host and tells, you know, and if you don't know whether to vote for me, you ain't black. That is a staggeringly offensive thing. I just want to imagine Donald Trump on the air with an Alabama Republican host saying, you know, if you don't vote for me, you ain't white. How would that have gone over?
Yeah, well, I mean, imagine if he had said, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black. I mean, try to imagine Trump saying what Biden said and making the case, making a good case, actually, because I think Trump's policies are better for blacks. There's no question in my mind that the policies are actually better. But the hubris of
ownership,
of the Democrats.
The sense of ownership. We own you. You stay on the plantation and you can be the house slave. But if you vote right and if you turn out and if you do exactly what we say, you will get more scraps from the table. As I've said to you here before, the Republican Party until Trump treated evangelical voters and pro-life voters much the way the Democrats take black voters for granted. We own you. You have nowhere else to go.
Yeah, I've said exactly that many times.
And you made fun of that. You made fun of Biden's racist, condescending speech by taking the kind of, I think it would look like dialogue that blackface minstrels like Governor Northam of Virginia used to use.
But the thing is that a lot of people, this is the problem with Twitter, right? A lot of people on Twitter are idiots. Like they're just very, very limited in what they know. They're just there to be nasty and they've got nothing. They're unemployed. They don't want to get a job. And so they spend the whole day on Twitter being nasty anonymously. So what most of them obviously didn't get was that not many years ago, you'll remember this, that Biden actually said that that the GOP, they want to put, he was talking to a black audience, they want to put y'all back in chains. I mean, said it like, you know, it was heads exploded when he said that. So I made that part of my tweet and stuff. But I was just going to say, you know, it's kind of funny because Facebook, which I think has banned me, I can't post on Facebook, but the responses on Facebook, I did post the same thing. A friend of mine did it for me. And the responses, Facebook is much less nasty than Twitter. There is something about Twitter. It's really unfortunate, but the viciousness of people on Twitter, I just block anybody who says anything unpleasant. I block them instantly. I don't mute them.
Let's be clear about what happened, okay? You made fun of Biden's racism, and people accuse you of racism for doing so. You're nicer than I am. You think they're just stupid. I think they knew perfectly well what was going on. They knew you were making fun of a Democrat who was being racist, and they couldn't argue with you because the Democrat was behaving in a racist way. So they decided, we're going to turn it around. We're going to say Metaxas is being racist, and then he's going to apologize. And then for the rest of his life, we can say Eric Metaxas, who was forced to apologize for his racism. And you wisely did not apologize. You did not throw blood in the water to attract more sharks.
No, because it's ridiculous. Apologize to whom? And by the way, you know that if you apologize, they don't believe in grace. They are the anti-grace group. Yeah. They don't believe in, if you show the slightest weakness, they come after you. Now, by the way, 20 years ago, Jimmy Fallon did a blackface thing where he was imitating Chris Rock on SNL, okay? No big deal. He's friends with Chris Rock. It's an affectionate impression of Chris Rock. He now apologized and thanked the people for holding him to account. And I thought to myself, can you imagine that he was forced to apologize? I guarantee you the lawyers at NBC said, you better apologize. You have no choice. You want your job. You got to apologize. But I thought to myself, this is just crazy. Does anybody dream that Jimmy Fallon is racist? And that, I mean, I'm sure Chris Rock knew it and loved it and whatever. Nonetheless, he has to come out, the Kabuki Theater, he has to go through this, the show trial. And I just think I now and again, I want to talk about this, that we're living in such crazy times, and we ought not to give into it if we can possibly help it. It's really just
the same people absurd. The same people who want the racist organization Planned Parenthood to kill black children by the thousands in the ghettos want to weaponize the racism charge because it suits their political convenience. They are trying to use, manipulate, inflame, and basically weaponize and then cast aside the black American population. They don't really care about them. They don't send their kids to the same schools. They don't live in the same neighborhoods unless they're gentrifying them and driving everyone out. They think that black voters are useful idiots. A surprising powerful number of black voters are moving away. There's a move in Blexit.
That's why I think that the criticism toward me was so vicious, because I actually think a lot of Democrats are really scared to death. For the first time in 50 years, it looks like there's pushback. Charlemagne the God, the guy who was talking to Biden, who dared say, I still have some questions. He dared to say that I'm not ready to say I'm all in for you. You know, he was thinking for himself. You see this over and over and again. Kanye West, obviously, there, but more and more voices are coming out. And I think the Democrats are scared because they know that if they lose a fraction of the black vote, they're dead. I mean,
think about the underlying realities, okay? Most African Americans are either middle class or working class. They're not mostly part of this elite that ride the Acela quiet car between the power centers of DC, New York, and Boston. Black workers are suffering more than white vote workers because fewer of them can work from home and do Zoom meetings with their Beijing field office. Trump cares about working class Americans of every race. Back in the 80s and 90s, before he got into politics, he was constantly being praised by black leaders for creating jobs, for hiring in a non-discriminatory way, helping Black people succeed. Black people are Americans. We have to remember they're Americans. They're starting to remember America First benefits them.
John, thank you. We're going to, if you don't have to go, we'll keep you. Well, I'm going to talk to the Palau's for the next segment or two. But if you don't have to go away, we'll catch you at the end of the hour. I hope you can stick around, folks. We'll be back with John. Right now, we're going to talk to Kevin and Wendy Palau. Don't go away.
It's a burning thing.
Hey, folks, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. Guess what? I have two friends of mine on the program. All the Palaus are friends of mine. You know Luis Palau, who refers to himself in the third person. He always says Palau when he's talking about himself. His sons don't do that. Andrew and Kevin don't do that. I'm on today with Andrew and his wife, Wendy. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Eric. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Andrew, I know that you followed in your father's footsteps in terms of being an evangelist, and that's basically what you do. Now, how can you do evangelism? How can you do stadium evangelism during a COVID crisis? Where are you now, and what are you doing?
Well, the very last thing we did before President Trump made that first speech and things began to change, we were in Buenos Aires, Argentina, with 1,500 pastors. Getting ready, we were launching the Buenos Aires Festival for this next November. Well, everything changed from then. Probably 9 festivals around the globe that we would have been doing this year, we've rescheduled. So that's kind of fine for us because, you know, like we did in New York, the longer you have, the further you go, the deeper you can go together. And we'll get back into that track. But in the meantime, you know, we've all been moving into the digital realm. Young people have been there for a long time, but some of us got a little more forced into it. And so we're doing digital festivals. We also have a digital platform called Hope with God. When we first acquired this digital ministry, which is just sending out little messages of hope and encouragement, paid advertisement on Facebook, it yields decisions for the Lord. When we first got it about 6 months ago, 8,000 a week would say yes to Jesus through this tool. It's moved 10 weeks later. It's 80. I think the last report from last week was 86,000 people around the world saying yes to the Lord in English and Spanish.
What is that website?
You can go to Hope with God.
Facebook.
Yeah. There's a webpage, or you can look at Hope with God on Facebook and see some of the efforts being made there. That's been amazing. And then we're doing a festival. A little different than that effort is a festival that every single one of you listening can use personally as another tool to say, I've tried various things with my friends. Here's something. It's a testimonially based effort where all these friends of ours in music and in film and in various aspects of life will say, I have hope with God. And they just do 60, 90 second testimonies. And it culminates with some worship, and I'll share the gospel. It's like a mini festival.
So this is in a couple of days, right?
Yeah, Saturday, May 30. That one's called Stories of Hope. And it was really Wendy's kind of captured some of the concepts and used this idea of testimonies, gospel.
That is this Saturday. That's one of the reasons I almost forgot why we wanted to have you on ASAP. Good. So people need to write this down this Saturday. And like, what time of day is it? When is this happening?
It'll be 5 p.m. on the West Coast, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, Stories of Hope. It'll be a one-hour special. But any time that anyone plugs in just to check it out, they will hear a lot of little testimonies and have an opportunity to respond to the gospel. So as you think of your friends, you can say, hey, you know, my faith is really important to me. Here's this link. Talks about the hope that I have in these times. I wonder what you think. And you know, just get it out to your social media, Stories of Hope, and then follow up with them, because you can expect there's a lot of prayer supporting this, right, babe?
Yep. Yeah. When we first locked down here out in Oregon, we, you know, Andrew and I had we traveled quite a bit, but we had these days of of just sort of looking at each other, just thinking, what are
good
we
days.
Going to do now? Good days.
But, how did I get stuck with this dude for the first time? Right? For the first time, you're like, what?
Wow.
No, I think, isn't this an amazing time, seriously? Like, it's been an amazing time. We have all been put in these situations, and a lot of good has come out of it. God has used
that's exactly what I was going to say. I felt this sense of, I'm not sure if our generation will have an opportunity like this ever again, to share the gospel in such a wide range, time of receptivity, that people's hearts are open, their minds are open, they're questioning everything they've put their hope in and their faith in, and this sense of, we have got to make the most of the opportunity right now. So that's kind of where the concept of I have hope with God because comes up, came in 60 seconds. I have hope with God. And we asked all of these high profile people to just give us a 60-second I have hope with God because that are going to be on the show.
I have hope with God because, so again, if people want to tune in this Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, they would just go to hopewithgod.com?
Yeah, or palau.org. All roads lead to the tool. So you can go to palau.org or Stories of Hope. Google that, and you'll see the festival there, and you can grab that link and send it forward.
Well, I'm so glad that we were able to get this information out this week. This is important, and, you know, I know, Andrew, you know, to be an evangelist, you understand, you know, you're sharing something so central. We live in a culture where people try to push religion to the outskirts like it's that thing. And it's like, no, it's like atomic structure. It's inescapable. It is everywhere. We're all looking for meaning, or we're distracting ourselves from looking for meaning because it's too painful, because we're afraid there is no meaning. And this is an important time for people just to think. And I just want to say up front, I always want to, like, you know, blow the ending by telling people there is hope. It is real. A lot of us have checked it out. We've lived it. I cannot imagine what it would be like to go through life, which is so tough, without God. I can't imagine. Like, I think about it every day. Yeah. What would I do? What would I do? Where would I go? How would I self-medicate? How would I dull this pain? Because I don't know if I would be able to deal with it. It's just beautiful that you're doing that. I got to ask you, Andrew, how's your dad doing? What's going on?
Well, he's doing well. And, like, you know, I remember full well what it was like without the Lord. I never walked with God till I was 27, and I got involved with all the typical stuff of this world, alcohol and drugs and all the relationships that go along with that partying lifestyle for 27 years. And, you know, I had a mask to say to the world, everything's fine. I mean, what else are you going to do? I was in deep, right? And I bought in fully, but in the end, my dad is the one, an evangelist, but so faithful, not just proclaiming broadly, but to his very own son, faithful to always find appropriate tools and ways along the way to say, son, I love you. You're doing well in school. You got lots of friends, but as a father who loves you, I have to warn you. And he would always give me John 10:10, right? The thief comes for one purpose only, to steal, kill, and destroy. But I have come to give you life, and life in abundance. And isn't that what you want, Andrew? And he would share with me the gospel. And he jokes on me. Eventually, at a Luis Palau festival, I gave my life to the Lord. And it was the beginning of change, and the forgiveness and the healing of addictions and the new desires for my heart. All those things became real. And he's been faithful to the end. It's good to have stories like that. He's got stage 4 lung cancer, but he's pushing through to the end. He hasn't done festivals for a number of years now. All the ones that we've done, I've been the preacher. But he does go down to the mailbox and harass people down there, you know, and people love him in the neighborhood. As you know, Dad, he's so lovable. But when he goes to the mailbox, everywhere he goes, at the doctor's offices, he shares the good news everywhere he goes. And he's doing quite good. He's tired easily. So continue to pray for him. We're really grateful, and we've been thankful. Every day with him is like gold.
Yeah. I mean, look, your father, you already know this, but when I first met him and got to know him, I thought, this is a man of integrity. And when I say that, I don't mean that only in the normal sense, but there's something about him that you can see that this is real to the bottom. And I think that's important. There are a lot of people who talk a good game. They talk about God to every waitress, but their lives don't really reflect it. And there's something about the way your father communicates. So it kind of thrills me, frankly, that, you know, you all of you, but you particularly have followed in his evangelist's footsteps, because it is important. So many people don't know about this. Now, if people go to this website anytime after 8 p.m. Eastern this Saturday, right? Like, let's say it's Sunday.
Yeah.
Will this still be available Sunday and Monday and Tuesday for them to watch?
Yes, it will. We'll air it. It'll be like the big premiere. And that helps people sometimes when you're making your invitation to have a guiding time to look at. Yeah. But after that time, you can look at it for 5 days in its entirety. And then from there, you can break it up into digital pieces. If one of these people like strikes you, you could use their little piece of it.
Okay. All right. Well, I just wanted to make sure that we got to you in time to blast this out there, because who knows how many lives are going to be changed. Folks, listeners, viewers, I'm talking to you. You have an opportunity to tune people into this, to send this to people, to send them a link. People need hope. Don't kid yourself. Everybody needs hope. You can go to Hope with God, Stories of Hope, Palau.org. Very important. Christian best-selling author and speaker Richard E. Simmons does not shy away from the big questions of life. His latest book is called Reflections on the Existence of God, and it tackles the biggest question of all, does God exist? I've read this book, and I got to tell you, I'm a little biased, but you can imagine that I like it a lot, because Simmons offers insights for those grappling with life's biggest questions. Where do we find meaning in life? Who determines what is evil? Can we be moral without God? Does God even exist? Former White House aide Wallace Henley says, I've taught apologetics for many years and I've read every scholar mentioned in this book. Of all the books on apologetics, Simmons is the best I have ever read. This book is easy to read because it's divided into a series of brief essays, perfect for a devotional or discussion with a friend. I highly recommend that you add a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God to your pandemic reading list. Simmons asks questions that speak directly to one of the most important things you possess, your worldview. Folks, you know how important this is to me. Your worldview is going to impact the way you live your life for better or for worse. If you want to challenge yourself to spiritual and intellectual growth, and I hope you do, then be willing to ask yourself life's toughest questions. Dive in today by picking up a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God right now. Go to existenceofgodbook.com. That's existenceofgodbook.com. Folks, welcome back. As you know, I'm talking to Andrew and Wendy Palau. Yes, the word Palau, it can be pronounced Palau, or it can be pronounced Palau. Luis Palau says it. I feel like if I pronounce it any different than your dad, Andrew, I feel like I'm wrong. Like it should be Palau. But since your name is Palau, you can say Palau. I'm really excited that you're doing this evangelistic thing that's going to be this Saturday night, 8 p.m. Eastern. People can check it out at Stories of Hope or Hope with God or Palau.org. Totally worth checking out. But you mentioned a number of known figures are going to be involved. And I thought, why don't you guys, you know, give us a taste of who's going to be on.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. I hope all of you will think about this and your own personal life. You know, we're not all evangelists, but we're all witnesses. Every believer is a witness. And we're partnering with Go 2020 and a number of other groups to get the word out that here's one more tool for you to consider using to introduce your friends and family to the good news of Jesus Christ, which we know transforms lives. And other friends of ours that have experienced this, we just asked them to share their testimony in little 90-second chunks. And so we'll have, you know, Clayton Kershaw, Tony Dungy, Kirk Cousins, Chrissy Metz from This Is Us, Monty Williams of the Phoenix Suns, and a whole lot of others. You can go to those sites, Palau.org, and see the lineup. And if any of those people's, you know, gifts connect you with some of your friends, something of interest to them, if they're an athlete and they're from your hometown, that kind of thing, it's just a way to draw people in to say, like, here's some people they've got notoriety, but they're just regular folks who need Jesus just like you and I do. So, and then we'll have worship with Toby Mac, Hillsong United, Carrie Jobe and Cody Carnes, Tasha Cobbs, some Latino, naturally, since the Palau event, we have to have Ted Sanz.
Got to get the Latinos in there. You got to do some Latinos, otherwise it's not really a Palau event. I know.
And we're going to do this in English now, and that'll go out May 30th, Saturday, May 30th, 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 Eastern, and then available after that for a number of days. We'll do one in Spanish later on. About 2 weeks later, we'll have one fully focused on the Spanish-speaking world. But this is a great opportunity for you, and you've been praying to invite your friends to know Jesus.
People need opportunities. I really do think so often we forget that, you know, maybe because I'm walking with Jesus, I forget that I can lean on him when things get tough, and things get tough. Yeah. We're all idiots and sinners. We do bad things. We experience bad things. Life is tough. And I lean on Jesus so automatically at this point, thank God. But I forget that there are a lot of people that they don't even know that they can lean on him. They don't know that it's real. There's a lot of people that I think that they just can't believe that it's real. They think it's something that works for some people. And they forget, no, Jesus died for you. He wants to communicate with you as much as he wants to communicate with anyone who has ever lived. People don't get that. And so sometimes they need to be steered towards something like this. And that's why I'm so grateful for the opportunity to plug this, because how many of us have a friend or a relative that we love them and we know that they're going through something right now, and they don't know where to go. They don't go to church, or they don't whatever. Well, all they need to do, you know, is click on the link that you send them. And maybe if you pray for them, they'll actually do that, and something will come of it. Yeah, tell us again, what are some of the best links if people want to go to find this?
Hope with God, Palau.org will be the best places to find it. We'll be streaming on Instagram with Luis Palau Live.
Facebook,
Hope with God will be streaming, and it'll be up for 5 days past the event that you can use it. And, you know, one of the things I've been thinking so much about as it's so easy to share content right now, is that God partners with us as we share who Jesus is to us. There's a partnership, because God is pursuing our friends. God is pursuing people. He loves them. He wants to be in relationship with them. He died for them. So we have, as believers, we have just this beautiful freedom to know that the Holy Spirit is partnering with us as we take those steps to share hope with others.
I think we also have to tell people who aren't on the same page as we are, like, we know this is real. This is not just buying into a philosophical system. I mean, Andrew, you've experienced this. I know I've experienced many, many miracles where I have no doubt that Almighty God, the one who created the universe and who created us in his image, actually did things in my life because he loves me that much, that he gets involved personally. And you can talk about that. I mean, you know, you were addicted. When you see miracles, it completely changes your perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he's transformed my life. Wendy and I both, you know, grew up in great Christian homes, but despite those blessings, we wandered away before we knew each other, and got so hopelessly in the pit, and God rescued us. The cross of Christ, to forgive and to lift the shame and guilt, and the power of the Spirit to live life day to day, become mature and to grow, and the great promise of heaven. I mean, those are the things that answers all the great questions of life, and that's what the good news just encapsulates and holds within it. So that great power is available. But the thing that is encouraging, and we want to encourage all of you listening, is God wants to use you, your testimony that you could witness and testify, partnering with us and all these other friends that say, we do have hope. And this is where our hope with God comes from, through the good news. So you've made so many efforts. I'm sure you've prayed for your friends. And here's just one more way, you know, utilizing the notoriety of some of these athletes and movie stars and television personalities that are evidencing themselves as just regular folks. And in this moment of heightened receptivity, we will never have a chance like this again.
We have to go to another break and I have to say goodbye, but I want to thank you
for it.
Folks, take advantage of this opportunity. Please take advantage of it. Wendy and Andrew, God bless you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eric.
Hey, folks, welcome back. Don't forget this Palau thing that's going on. You have all the information, but I'm excited they're doing that. It's an exciting opportunity. John Zmirak, you're still there. Thank you for hanging around. I wanted to talk to you about one more thing. Actually, I want to mention in the next segment, I'm going to be reading a poem I wrote about Babe Ruth. It's light verse. It's not pretentious verse. It actually rhymes. But I just thought, you know what, during this strange shutdown, lockdown, bizarre time in our history, I suddenly miss baseball. Enough time has passed that I go, hey, what is going on? How can we be approaching June and there's no baseball? Will there be a World Series? It really does seem strange to me. I grew up as a Mets fan, as you know, in Queens.
Oh, we live
a mile from Shea Stadium, so I had to be a Mets fan.
Oh, absolutely.
But I appreciate Babe Ruth. He's an icon, and he represents sort of a kind of a happy America. You know, when we talk about Make America Great Again, there was a happy America. We always had our flaws, but when I think of Babe Ruth, he kind of represents that sort of a ultra American kind of figure.
Eric, you know, I grew up as a Mets fan, but in my school there were always a few Yankee fans, and the reason was. It made sense. We were right by Shea Stadium. The natural thing was to be a Mets fan, but the Mets were losing a lot year after year, and the Yankees were winning. The guys who were willing to be Yankee fans living like a mile from Shea Stadium were the bullies. So I came to associate a Yankee hat with a punch in the face. So I would like root for the Bothus party against the Yankees. Really anyone against the Yankees.
The Yankees are easy to hate because I remember the line when I was in school and there were a few Yankee fans and the Mets. Now people have to remember in the 70s, okay, from 73 till like the 86, they were the worst team. And I watched them faithfully on the black and white TV upstairs in the hot attic room. And I know that what we normally would say to Yankee fans was like, yeah, the Yankees are the best team money can buy, which at the time, of course, was true.
Yeah. They didn't develop their players. They just poached them from other teams. Anyway, I look forward to your poem about Babe Ruth. And I miss baseball too. I miss all the normal things in America, like freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of religion, people being willing to discuss political ideas, people not calling the cops on their neighbors because they're violating some obscure regulation. I mean, we are becoming the China of the Cultural Revolution, where people, we caught you deviating from orthodoxy, so you're going to have to publicly apologize and do self-criticism. We're going to have a struggle session, and then maybe, we might accept you back. Look at this woman in Central Park, okay? There was this woman who was being obnoxious. She had her dog illegally off the leash, which you shouldn't do. I mean, that can be dangerous. So this black man who was watching birds, they're both upper middle class people, okay?
Watching birds? Are there bird watchers?
Yes, the Central Park's full of them. My point is, these are both members of America's elite who can live in walking distance of Central Park, one of them to walk her dog, another to watch birds. And he threatened to report her for having her dog off the leash. She mouthed off to him. He had a bunch of dog treats, which he carries around with him. He said, no, I'm gonna get your dog over here. I'm gonna basically like threatening to take her dog from her. She then escalated, called the police and said she was gonna say an African-American man was threatening her life. So she was lying, but he was trying to steal her dog. It was an ugly confrontation of the kind that before the age of camera phones would have happened and been forgotten, okay? Of course, in a country, in a state where the Second Amendment were in effect, nobody would act this way. People are a lot more polite, whereas the other guy might have a gun. People nod and they say, okay, I'm terribly sorry. Manners and the Second Amendment are closely linked, I'm convinced, which is why the South is more polite than the North. Because you can't, you know, in New York, you see people screaming and cursing at each other. They know nobody has a gun they're going to pull out. So they get to be just as foul-mouthed and horrible as they want to be. Well, in this case, the gun was a camera phone. And now this woman's life has been ruined. She had lost her job. She is being persecuted.
Now, wait, how did she lose her job?
Because her name was put out there and people doxed her and found out where she worked and started barraging her company with, why are you employing this racist? You're a racist company.
Why would the company?
Because they're cowards like everyone else.
No, but this is the key. This is, to me, the key. Corporate America, when they behave like this, they are cowardly pigs, because the idea that you would fire someone because of this kind of stuff. People have no courage. They have no character. They have no integrity. They have no grace. I mean, I'm amazed that, you know, you can do a lot of bad things and you can apologize and whatever. But I just think that this was in the heat of the moment. So even if what she did was terrible,
it was.
You don't get to apologize.
But it's worse. It gets worse, Eric. They took away her dog.
You're kidding.
She had the dog from a rescue group. And during the confrontation, she had the dog on the leash and people said, look, she's pulling that dog's neck. She's got that leash is too tight. So you had thousands of people contacting the rescue group and they took back the dog. I'm telling you, if you fired me, that's one thing. If you tried to take my dogs, it would be like the end of Bonnie and Clyde. Okay. That would not end in a happy or pretty way. I cannot believe the kind of lynch mob persecution.
Well, see,
we're always one step away from that in America now. We decided that everyone else is our enemy unless they're part of our inner circle of the virtuous and the righteous. It's the Salem witch trials all over again. We have that in our national DNA, and it has come out with a vengeance.
Well, no, it's not our national DNA. It's our human DNA. You know this. We believe in original sin, and we believe that this is, we're never far from this, okay? Yeah. The 1790 French mob.
Yeah.
This is always looking. Listen, in Staten Island, of all places, did you see the video? There was a grocery store in Staten Island where a woman dared to come into the grocery store without a mask.
Mm-hmm.
They abused her verbally and screamed her out of the store as though she had said Heil Hitler. It was just stunning. It was absolutely stunning. And I have to tell you that when I see something like that, you know, in Staten Island, again, this is
that's
San Francisco. It's kind of it's a weird thing. Oh, we're out of time, my friend. We're out of time. God bless you, John.
God bless you
so much. Catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks. When we come back, I'm reading a poem about Babe Ruth. There's nothing you can do about it.
I can't lie. No more of your darkness.
Hey, folks. Welcome back. I was just talking about how I miss baseball, and I said that I had written a poem years ago about Babe Ruth, and I wanted to read that poem to you, and there's nothing you can do about it. It's called The Sultan of Swat.
Yeah, swing away.
And here's the poem. Babe Ruth was the Sultan of Swat. He hit home runs a lot. He'd take the baseball for a ride and round the diamond with a jerky stride, a tiny comic trot. Babe Ruth was the Kaiser of clout. He knew how to hit him out. His full name was George Herman Ruth. His number was 3, and that's the truth. There isn't any doubt. Babe Ruth was the Marquis of Might. His shots were out of sight. One year he blasted 60 such. It's nothing if you've got the touch of supersonic flight. Babe Ruth was the Baron of Blast. His swing started back in the past. It rolled through the present with a mighty crack and shot toward the future, and it didn't look back. Even Gehrig was outclassed. Babe Ruth was the Sovereign of Swing. There's no sense arguing. He wore a pinstripe uniform with a waistband larger than the norm. He was a one-man summer thunderstorm. I think that's everything. Wait! Babe Ruth was the bad boy of Boom. He was the ruling vizier of Vava and Voom. He was the prophet of every pitcher's doom. He was the poster boy of Breathing Room and the architect of Zoom. He was the true conjugator of Going Gone. He was the mad inventor of the Bronxian bomb. He was the Grand Archduke of Outta Here and the Lord High Mayor of Wait Till This Year. Have I made myself quite clear? So hail to the Sultan of SWAT, to the master blasting monster tot, to the long ball hitting Lancelot, to the pinstriped prince of the lunar shot, and the reigning Raja of the cleanup spot. Babe Ruth is the Sultan of SWAT. Thank you very much.
Beautiful, beautiful. Round the bases now.
That's my baseball poem. And I, you can find it at my website, ericmetaxas.com. I've got a bunch of poems that I wrote there. And it's kind of funny. We were talking about Chris Rock earlier. I think he would be the guy to read it. Like sometimes you think of a voice, Chris Rock should be the guy to read that poem.
Excellent.
Now, before we go, folks, I want to remind you of the good news. Someone has donated actual Geneva Bible pages. If you don't know what they are, to buy one, it's like $50, I think, to buy one on the internet. If you give $250 to Angel Tree, okay, for $200, you get two subscriptions to Metaxas Super. That is, you know, commercial free podcasting and a number of other things. You get two of those. You get a signed copy of my book, Seven More Men. There's one right there. Seven More Men sent to you. That's for $200. But if you give $250 while supplies last, because we don't have a ton of these, we will also send you a Geneva Bible page. I mean, it's an amazing thing. It's over 400 years old. It's beautiful. I thank the person who I don't know if we should mention their name, but I just wanted to say we want to do that. As you know, if you give $500, you'll get two of those and two books and then you get all that stuff and a visit to the studio.
Yeah. Right? Yes.
And anybody can give $10,000, and I know someone can. We just have 3 days left. This is a really beautiful opportunity to help some kids that need help. We want to encourage you to go to the website, metaxastalk.com. Very easy to give, I promise you. Super easy. Or you can call the number, 888-206-2793, 888-206-2793, 888-206-2793. God bless you as you give, and thank you for listening to this program.